You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Good afternoon. It is May 3rd. My name is Captain Ray Jarvis, and I'm your host for today's Guidepost. On today's episode, we have Captain Ben Wally from Maine, and we're going to just talk about striped bass a little bit and kind of give you guys a little season intro to the upcoming season and get you excited and kind of get you aware. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened last year and kind of what we expect to see this year. And we'll get a little taste of what Ben sees up in Maine and some of what I see down here in Massachusetts. For those of you that don't know me, I'm a guide out of Westport, Mass. I own Salt of the Earth Sport Fishing. And today we have Ben Wally, like I mentioned. So Ben, how you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's always good to touch base before the season really kicks off.
Yeah, great. And how was your winter? Made it through all right?
It was a long winter. White stuff, right? And glad to be on this side of it for sure. And itching to get out after our straight friends. So
absolutely. Yeah, we had a nice little break there getting down to Tie Fest over the winter, and obviously show season kept everybody kind of busy. But yeah, it's good to kind of be on the other side, and you know, down my way we're starting to see fish show up. And that's good and concerning. We'll dive a little bit more into that. But, you know, first thing I kind of wanted to do was just have a little season recap on 2025 and kind of some things that you saw, things you didn't see, and things that were kind of a little concerning, but maybe a little exciting as well, just to keep it light. So, you know, kind of what did you see last year that, stands out from, you know, just the norm?
Yeah, I mean, last season was different from any season leading up to, quite frankly. You know, I heard a lot of reports of it being the worst fishing they've ever had. Fish being really picky, which I can attest to. But I also thought personally, it ended up being one of the best seasons. Just required a lot of work to figure out where they are. You know, I guide up in Maine, and being on that northern fringe of the migration, I feel like any changes in the fishery become amplified up by us.
Yeah.
So because of that, you know, this last year was really the first year I saw a dramatic shift in no small fish. You know, it wasn't until mid-September that a client caught a fish under 27, which
wow,
is just insane. You know,
yeah, that's a lot of time to go by before seeing a fish under 30.
Yeah, and on the other end, you know, we caught so many big fish that are, you know, great. You know, clients will love catching those big fish, but it was also quite challenging on the flats, more so than usual, because all the fish we were seeing were seasoned, you know, smart, bigger fish.
Yep.
That were just harder to fool. So you really had to be on your A game and luck into the fish, you know, willing to be fooled. So
right. Yeah, we saw some similar stuff down my way as well. Not a lot of small fish at all. I mean, early on in the season, you know, we happened into little pockets of them here and there, but for the most part it was those kind of mid 20 inch to mid 30 inch fish. And as the season progressed and fish moved out of our waters, it really kind of became, you know, a slot and upper kind of fishery. And like you said,
yeah,
you know, those fish were definitely trickier, a little bit more seasoned and aware. You know, they've seen it all before, so to speak. So
yeah,
it definitely wasn't
the other
easy.
Yeah, the other big change that I saw last year was a lot of the fish that we normally have in Casco Bay, for instance, were absent. They were offshore. You know, the pogies, for some reason, there were some in the bay, but a lot of them, from reports I got, were offshore, which ended up pulling a lot of the bass, I think.
Yeah.
And in addition, a lot of the typical spots where you could go and blind cast or fish structure, you know, that have been productive as long as I've been, you know, chasing them, were just dead voids, you know. And
right.
It's not to say 100 yards away they were fish, but they were schooling. And I've talked to biologists about it and sent them footage I've captured. And, you know, it's a new behavior that I know they haven't seen. And I think it's a probably a combination of safety and numbers, as well as efficiency in feeding for these bigger fish. But what's happening is, you know, 90% of the fish are in 10% of the water. So it becomes difficult in order to find where those fish are.
Right. Yeah. And when you do, you know, you're kind of trying to keep it under wraps as much as you can so that those fish aren't seeing enormous amounts of pressure.
Right.
Some of those offshore schools you're mentioning, I know other guys have, you know, mentioned that as well. And, you know, are you seeing a pretty good amount of pressure on those fish when people do come across them? Does the word kind of get out pretty quickly?
It definitely got out. Due to YouTube and other outlets, which is concerning. You know, it's the same concern I have for the state of the fishery as it stands. You know, we have all these breeder-sized fish that and a lack of smaller ones growing up and yet our spawning stock biomass continues to go up. So management thinks that it's this, we're in a good place. And but reality is our spawning stock biomass is increasing because the fish are growing, not because there's more fish joining it. So at the same time, we continue to have people and taking from that group, right? It's going to continue to decline, along with natural mortality. So it's one of the reasons. Do I think you keeping a fish for your table today is going to like make or break the fishery? No, but it's one of those things I think we all need to just evaluate. Like, we have this population of fish that we need to reproduce, and we all should, I think, get behind like, hey, let's try to preserve it until, you know, the work group that was put in place by ASMFC figures out what variables matter, as well as, you know, weather conditions, whether, you know, during the spawn, so that we can have another good spawn. But it's a critical point, I think, where we need to just protect those fish.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, with the lack of those recruits behind that large spawning stock biomass that we do have, you know, they're seeing all the pressure. And, you know, like you said, we're kind of losing those fish gradually. And with no recruits behind them, it's more important than ever to kind of treat those fish as best we can. You know, when you are targeting them, just understanding fight time, temperature, you know, hooks all matter. Everything like that really, at this point, matters more than ever before. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people this season, as we see on social media, you know, people posting stuff about what they're seeing up and down the coast. And, a lot of folks are like, it almost seems like they're shocked in a way that they're seeing so many big fish early. And, you know, I see those posts and those comments, and it's, at this point, I don't know how you don't realize that, it's because we don't have anything else behind those fish that we're seeing these fish, you know, bigger this year than we did last year. And that vast majority are all big fish. So, you know, for the people that are kind of shocked and surprised by what they're seeing, like, that is why we haven't had a good recruit in 7 years now. And, you know, with the winter we had last year, hopefully that's something positive. We'll kind of see, fingers crossed, but time will tell. And yeah, I think that the public in general, you know, we obviously have a lot of followers that listen to this that understand how to handle fish properly and the right things to do. But, you know, getting the word out to the general public, to your friends that might not listen to this, that's really important to get that message out now.
Definitely. And I think, you know, a couple of the bigger things, like, you know, on plugs, swapping them out for singles, the amount of fish that I can recall being like severely damaged, you know, with trebles in the eyes or head or fins, or, you know, it's one of those things, they swim off fine, but, you know, it just predisposes them for infection. And, you know, it's easy enough to swap the hooks out and to reduce that portion, right? Every little bit helps, I believe, as well as, you know, just keeping them in the water the most. To your point about, you know, social media and the posts, you know, I think it's great that people are catching these once in a lifetime size fish.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting.
But I just hope that, you know, they're not overdoing it because of that once in a lifetime size, because there are more and they're going to catch more, because that's all we have. And I just hope everybody's, you know, being quick and deliberate about taking pictures and getting the fish back in the water.
Yeah.
And I feel like, as a general statement, you know, I feel like a lot more people are realizing and feeling the impact of the situation we're in now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like the Jersey run that they've been having the last week or so is great, but it's a shell of what it could be, you know. And
absolutely,
I feel like all of these spots along the coast, from Jersey to the Cape Cod Canal, you know, if you talk to people that have been fishing it, you know, religiously over the years, it really is a shell of what it is. Mm-hmm. But to the average person that's getting out there and they're seeing these fish push through and they're big, you know, to them it's like, there's no problem, they're all here, you just don't know where to find them.
Yeah,
and
that's a common,
you know,
I think
you and I both would, you know, be the one saying, yeah, there's fish still around, but it's nowhere near where it should be. You know, the abundance you see when they're grouped up should be coastwide, you know, instead
Absolutely.
Of in 10% of the water, you know, they should be throughout. And yeah, I think it's elevated that kind of point of view when you're in points along the coast where everything funnels through,
mm-hmm.
that it obviously you're seeing all the fish push through that one area, and it looks like it's more than it is. But when you look holistically along the coast, you know, it's not spread out that way. You know, for the past probably 6-7 years now, being up in Maine, and I'm sure you and Mass, same thing. It's like, where's the biomass going to land this year? You know, I'm always thinking that, because 1 year Boston Harbor has all of them. The next year, you know, Piscataqua, Kittery area had the mass. And then the next year, you know, this Cape had them. And then the last couple of years I've had them up here, and it's like, it shouldn't be that way. Like, the mass shouldn't be in one spot. We should have them scattered throughout, but it's become this new, and concerning, but new kind of world we're living in, where the mass of the fish is going, I think, where the bait's going initially.
Yeah.
But,
I agree.
But it's, you know, year to year, you're just like crossing your fingers. I hope the fish come back to my area, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, when I was in my late teens, early 20s, early 2000s, you know, there was abundant striped bass. If you look at the trends, there was a lot of fish around. That was right after everything was kind of rebuilt. And, you know, up and down the coast, there was serious action going on. I mean, what we saw in the Elizabeth Islands in those days was mind-blowing. Now, you know, it's a few areas hold some fish, but those, that general structure, those endless boulder fields are vacant for the most part. And that's just evident of the lack of fish around, you know, and the lack of bait. I mean, we've lost major forage species that we really no longer see in the same kind of abundance. You know, we see pockets of them here and there. We see big schools of pogies, menhaden bunker, whatever you want to call it, up in Boston. Big shoals that push up, you know, up into Maine occasionally. And where I grew up down in Buzzards Bay, we used to have, you know, harbors choked with them. And now, you know, a harbor here and there may have a school or two, and you might see some migrate through, but for the most part, that bait is gone. And so are the fish. And you know, not only that, the abundance of striped bass has diminished significantly. But yeah, I think that, you know, what a lot of people in New Jersey are seeing, and you know, arguments I heard against, you know, the call for management last fall, the ASMFC stuff that got pretty much shot down, was that, you know, a lot of people were seeing some of the best fishing of their life, quote unquote, and there's nothing wrong. You know, I've never caught so many big fish, but therein lies the problem. You know, I've never caught so many big fish, but what about, you know, the other areas, the back bays, the estuaries, where all the little fish should be and all the recruits and, you know, like the lineage. It's just not there. And, you know, I've talked to some old timers that have fished the canal for decades and just shore guys for the most part. And they're like, yeah, you know, I really have to hunt these days to find these fish. And the canal used to be pretty predictable. I could plan on tides around moon phases and the fish would be there. Now it's like, they're not in the spots they used to be. They might find a pocket here and there, but it's just for the most part, those random fish are gone, and they've taken on this, like you said, kind of new behavior where they're really balled up together and kind of relating to where the bait tends to be. But it's just different
And
times, you know, it's a very different time
it
in striped
is.
bass.
And I remember back in, it was probably 2014, 2015, 2016, in that area where I'd go out and fish, you know, on the flats, and every single cast or every fifth cast, you'd catch one, and it could be a 20-incher, it could be one over 40, and everything in between. And it was like, it didn't matter where you went, you'd find fish. And now it's seriously like the amount of work and scouting and just, you know, that I have to put in as the guide to stay on top of where the fish are, you know, it's a lot of, I don't know that everybody does that, but you know, they're
You have
somewhere.
to.
It's just, where are they, you know? And
Yeah.
in order to be successful, like, it's just required a lot of work on my end, and you
Yeah.
definitely feel the hit, you know?
Yeah, no, it's, if you're, you know, successful guide at this point for striped bass, you're putting in extra time on the water. And, you know, if you're not out there every day with your finger on the pulse, you know, I know a lot of rec guys that hit me up for information and I share with friends and stuff like that. But it's hard to kind of just go out on a whim on a weekend after you've been at work all week and actually find where the fish are. You know, down my way, we have some areas where last summer and the year before, the fish really did that same kind of schooling behavior, at least the larger fish did. So there were some areas in deeper, cooler water where we could find those fish pretty predictably. And then, you know, we had our other haunts that we'd search, kind of hunt for fish, you know, shallow waters along the beaches or some flats locally. And, you know, some of those boulder fields that are around here as well, you could spend some time looking and you see the odd cruiser here and there, but, you know, you really have to put in your time on the water now to be any sort of a successful guide. So it's definitely more of a grind, and that you know, kind of breaks your profit margin there. So
yeah, I love that hunt and connecting those dots outside. But yeah, no, I recently had a piece in the film tour called Generations, mm-hmm. talking about the 2018 year class and my daughter getting older. She was born in 2018, and it's kind of this convergence between, you know, the fishing aging out and Vivi getting older. And the takeaway for me is like the amount of time I have to put in scouting and staying on top of it. Yeah. You know, when you do have a day off, being able to like get your kid on fish has become tricky. You know, it's no mm-hmm. longer like I'm just going to pop out for a couple hours and find a blitz. Like right. In June, we didn't get a single blitz in June on Brit herring, which we normally get. It was just weird.
Yeah.
But that was kind of, you know, it's fine and you can work around it and work harder to find them, but it's changing. And, I just, you know, I hope people are seeing it and it's motivating and not just like shutting people down. I hope it'll motivate people to speak up and kind of urge management to take action. You know, enough is enough of kicking the can down the road. Let's all get together and like, let's force them to make some meaningful change. And this coming week, we've got a couple meetings coming up.
Right. Yeah. We have the ASMFC. And, you know, we'll kind of see what they come up with, not only for striped bass, but menhaden and others. But it's time for them to do something. I can't, you know, it really still bothers me. Obviously, it bothers a lot of people that we didn't really get anything done last fall, you know, some minor things here and there. But for the most part, it was just another can kick. And it's frustrating because we were already kind of past the point of concern. So now things are just progressively getting worse.
Not to mention it goes against what, you know, 90%+ of the public was saying.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. There was serious support for something to be put in place. And, you know, it's a little discouraging when you spend the time and make the comment, but it's important for people to kind of stay persistent there and not let up, because eventually management is going to hear it. You know, we're just getting louder and louder, and, you know, the association is getting bigger and bigger, and that word is getting spread. And for those that aren't involved, they're kind of realizing, hey, something's going on here and it's not the norm. So, I think that, you know, I hope that management will do something here down the line. And I think we have some good people new to the ASMFC that may kind of lead the way and at least have a better goal in mind anyways. But, you know, to be determined. We'll kind of see what happens this week.
I think it's coming down to the point where they can't. They literally can't keep kicking the can down the road.
Right. Otherwise, yeah, we're not going to have anything left. And for the value of the recreational fishery, it's crazy to keep doing this when you're really affecting just so many people's lives. You're not just affecting fishermen. It's far beyond that. And we know that from all the economic studies. It's time to do something.
That said... me being probably the most optimistic person, I'm getting super excited. I'm about a week and a couple days out from going full tilt. I'm already getting ready. And, you know, there are big fish around. We need to take care of them, but, you know, it was a banner year last year, and it was really cool to like change methods and switch and learn. I spent a lot of time kind of on the fly side of things and dialing in flies for this new kind of sort of fishery, which was really fun and effective.
Has that that change in the fishery, you know, kind of force you to design some new patterns and create some new ideas?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is, and I think similarly on the gear side of things, you know, when the fish are pressured and tight, kind of bulked up, not wanting to eat, you kind of have to switch tactics to get it down to them, to get different actions, and, you know, throw in the standard flies while you might pick up one or two. You know, being able to trigger responses and crack that code is one of my favorite parts. But last year, you know, coming up with a couple patterns that move differently and that suspend and kind of really, it made the season. I had you up and we got on some good ones with some of these flies. And
yeah, that was an awesome day.
I think those changes in how you're targeting them, throwing something they haven't seen, but also going more for that response bite can be super critical, both gear and flies.
Yeah.
And I just love that aspect of it. So I'm excited for this season to see how it's continues to change, as well as, you know, being able to target big fish on the flats up here is super challenging. So I'm excited to, you know, work on cracking the code even more this year.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be fun. You know, seeing those big fish in that shallow water, that's pretty much nothing like it. I find that bass are even pickier than like bonefish on the flats. So it's, you know, they're real skittish. They're real picky. They come up and look at flies and turn away, and it's a lot of fun and it can be frustrating, but that's all part of the game. And when I got up and fished with you last year, it really was, you know, when we saw some fish in open water, it really was all about that reaction strike. So some of those flies you had developed were, you know, killer in that scenario. It was like, you know, strip, get their attention, let that thing pause and kind of flutter, and it drove them nuts.
Yep.
It's almost like, you know, when you're throwing a big plug, like a spook or something like that, and you get that kind of, you know, same reaction from them. It's like a reactionary kind of strike. So it's that predatory response that you're keying in on.
It's just like, you know, everybody south of us, you know, throwing glide baits.
Yeah, you know, it's a very similar. Yeah.
So it's interesting to compare notes with you and others who are having success further south on even heavier pressured fish than I was, and hearing what lures and plugs and, you know, you guys are having success on. And I'm like, isn't that funny? We all kind of arrived at the same conclusion on how to fool them, just different techniques, you know? So
yeah,
I love
you
that,
know that
stuff.
That glide bait thing has really taken off, and you know, I see it up and down the coast, and right now, you know, it's even bigger this year, and everybody's like, you know, chomping at the bit to get their hands on these $100 plugs. And a lot of them are handmade, and a lot of good you know, plug builders are cashing in on the craze. But yeah, there's something to be said for those things. It's pretty wild when you fish them, and you know you'll be around some other guys and you like outfish them 10-1 right in front of them on the same fish. And it's, you know, it's all about that reaction strike, that predatory response, and it's something different. And yeah, it's pretty wild, spin or fly, that just having that same kind of action has really proven to be something different.
Yeah. It's funny how bass of any sort just love that injured, you know, almost like disoriented, just that kick out hover.
Yeah.
You know, it's, they just can't resist it oftentimes. So,
oh, they can't. You'll get that follow, and then you kind of give them that pause, and it's like, boom, there you go.
So, yeah. So I'm really excited for the season because, you know, chasing big fish, both in deeper water and ultra skinny, you know, the fishing was great last year. You just had to really put the time in to stay on them, and then to get them to eat. But I mean, if you like fly fishing or like that hunt, we're kind of, it's great right now. It's It's great. So
yeah, there is definitely some positive. So, you know, we still have fish around. We still got some exciting stuff happening. And I think we have a good year ahead of us. And, you know, down my way, it's pretty much full swing already. Fish kind of filtered in big time the last couple of weeks. And there's some big fish being caught and lots of them. So it's going to be fun. And in a couple of weeks, we have the annual Cheeky kicking off, which is going to be fun.
I'll be down to fish with you.
Yeah, you'll be down my way. We're going to get out with some Cyangler guys and the Oxbow crew, and it's going to be a good time.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, we had a pretty banner day last year. We got on some big fish in shallow water that had kind of penned a school of pogies right up against the beach, and, you know, we were just kind of, we had them to ourselves.
It was insane.
It was insane. That's a good way to put it.
To see and catch fish up to like 50 pounds in that shallow water and just see pogies, you know, assassinating themselves as far as you can see was something pretty special.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be cool getting Tim out with us this go around.
It's going to be fun.
As Oxbow and Rising Tide and Striper Season is the official beer, I believe, of the Cheeky Tourney this year.
Sure is.
So I want to urge everybody who hasn't tried it, try it. And those who have and love it, you know, definitely go out and buy and support this cause, because it all goes to, you know, support ASGA and striper conservation efforts. And if you don't have it near you, go and hound, you know, the bars and liquor stores near you to carry it. Because the more we can, you know, sell, the more funds we can have to fight the good fight. So,
yeah, super important point there. And, you know, that beer was kind of created in unison with ASGA. And like you said, a portion of that goes right back to ASGA. And if you don't have it, you can ask for it. And it's, you know, it seems like it might be a difficult thing for your local bar or liquor store to get, but it's really not. They can just order it right up, and it all goes towards a good cause. So definitely check
and
that out.
It tastes good too.
Yep. Definitely very good. And if you're going to be at the Cheeky Tournament, come on down, check out the ASGA booth. I'll be there. The crew from Oxbow will be there, and you'll be there. And lots of other folks from the industry, and it's going to be a good time. So
it is. I'll be down pre-gaming and then heading down to Charleston.
Oh, yep. You got a busy weekend there, so you got a lot of travel. But, well, we'll get the... you know, we'll have a day on Friday, and I'll bring some stories to the event on Saturday. So it'll be a good time.
You got it, bud.
And, you know, little mention, just because, you know, with kind of the absence of striped bass, especially down my way as the season progresses, you know, we've really kind of filled a lot of gaps with albies and bonito. And those fish have just become increasingly important to for hire guys like myself, as well as just the average recreational angler in the area. So, you know, we have states like Massachusetts and North Carolina who did put in proactive measures to kind of make sure that we have these fish in the future to kind of, like I said, fill the void where the stripers are kind of lacking. And, you know, we'd like to see more states do the same. I know there's a push in many other states to kind of make that happen. We tried with Rhode Island over the winter. Unfortunately, you know, they went status quo on that, even despite the resounding public opinion in support of proactive measures. It was it's a little frustrating, and hopefully Rhode Island can kind of come around at some point. But a lot of us put a lot of effort into those meetings and, you know, writing letters, et cetera. So again, don't be discouraged. Just keep on keeping on. And eventually we're going to get something put in place in Rhode Island as well. So we had a chance to get out in the fall there and chase them around. And you got to see some of the excitement. Not that you haven't fished for them before, but we had a pretty banner
super
year
with fun, though.
Benito last year, and yeah, it's a good time.
I was blown away with how many Benito there were. Like,
yeah,
it hasn't always been that way, right?
No, it has not.
Like,
it's been pretty wild.
That was super fun.
Yeah. They're a fun fish, and we had a strong year class of those. Several years ago, we were seeing a lot of tiny ones in the area. Guys were catching them on sabikis, and those fish have just gotten bigger and bigger, and now they're just in abundance, and they're all over those bay anchovies and peanut bunker, and really, something to look forward to for us down here in the fall. And when we got out, you tried a bunch of different flies, but what do you kind of feel is one of your more effective patterns down here at that time of year?
I mean, the surf candy is hard to beat, Bob Popovic surf candy.
Right.
Just because it matches the hatch so well. But I ended up catching the most on this ugly little thing. It was just laser dub, like very little laser dub on a hook.
Right.
Just because it's so translucent and the baits they were on were like snot bait, like that big little anchovies.
That was
good.
Yeah, we had success on some variety of patterns last year. And, you know, those little surf candies, the albihore, just anything, like you say, a little dub on a hook sometimes was the key when they were on that really small kind of snot bait. But I remember you were throwing a little micro game changer as well when I had you on the boat there.
I hooked a couple of bonita on that.
And that thing swam pretty sweet in the water. It was, maybe an inch long or so, but it had a crazy action to it. So got some bites.
I also had quite a few people reach out who were fishing this fly of mine called the Chainbreaker, who Cody actually helped me name. But it's a bigger bait fish, 6-7 inch bait fish pattern, and guys were hammering albies on them this year.
Yeah,
like I wouldn't have thought to throw that personally. I'm no albie aficionado, but.
You gave me a couple of those.
Yeah,
I think in like a chartreuse color, and we were on some bass later in the fall, and we were throwing at bass, and we got some like hammer bonito on those things. So it was pretty cool to see. I mean, they're not shy about eating big plugs. I had a buddy catch an enormous albie last year. I think it was north of 20 pounds on a dock in Woods Hole. So
kidding. That's crazy.
So, and we've caught them offshore on big poppers when we're throwing at yellowfin and stuff. And you catch a, 18, 20 pound albie on it. So they're definitely not shy when they're hungry. So it's kind of cool to catch them on something bigger here and there. A little out of the ordinary.
But I almost think, just like with bass, a lot of times when there's that much bait, of a certain type, going with something totally different can make your day just because it stands out,
Right. Yeah, stand out from the crowd rather than match the hatch, just stand out a little bit. And sometimes that can be the difference.
Yep.
But, great. Well, Ben,
well,
I appreciate you
having me, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you getting on here tonight. It was a good chat, and I'm excited for the season. Obviously, you're excited for the season, and hopefully we got you all excited for the season. Just a little wrap up. Remember to do your best this season to handle with care, eliminate hooks where you can, and have fun. Do your part to kind of attend some meetings this year when they pop up, and don't forget the Cheeky Schoolie tournament coming up in a couple weeks, and see you there. And if we don't, we'll see you down the line. But thank you, Ben. And, how do people contact you if they want to reach out for a trip up in Maine this year?
Yeah. I mean, thanks for having me on. It's always a blast. You can reach me through Instagram at Ben Wally Fishing or through my website, benwallyfishing.com. It's going to be a good season. I'm excited. It's my calendar is pretty full, which is great. But if you're looking to get out, hit me up and maybe we can try to find a slot.
Sounds good.
If not, go with Jarvis. Go with Jarvis.
Yep. Yeah. As with me, I'm, you know, my calendar's pretty full, but definitely reach out if you want to go, and I'd be happy to get you out. And, you know, we can always talk conservation if the fishing's slow. So.